Welcome to Read This Comic Before You Die, the podcast where we help you put together the world's greatest comic book collection, probably. In each episode, we will present a comic series or graphic novel that we feel deserves a place in your collection. Stick with us and we will transform your life, help you to earn the respect of your peers and give you a collection of books that would make Ron Burgundy jealous.
Wow.
What do you reckon?
Respect of your peers, indeed.
Yeah.
From the friendly world of comics.
There'll probably be a disclaimer we should put on the podcast as well, that, you know, if your friends don't respect you.
I wasn't expecting Ron Burgundy to get a mention this early in. Fair.
Deep cut. So, what are we talking about this time around?
So, welcome everyone. This time round, we are talking about a very special Punisher comic entitled The Slavers.
So this was a really deep cut, because when we spoke about The Punisher,
sure,
I assumed you were going to go for everyone's favourite.
Oh, what do you think everyone's favourite?
Actually, there's two, isn't there? There's Welcome Back, Frank.
Right.
And probably Circle of Blood, I think it was called, which was the Mike Zeck First Limited series, which
I didn't
I
think you'd know about that one.
Oh, yeah, big fan of that one.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, you're half right. Mm-hmm. It is written by Welcome Back, Frank writer Garth Ennis, who is most famous for Punisher Kills the Marvel Universe, where it's a one-shot where, guess what, he literally does kill every superhero and villain in the Marvel Universe. I think he's done it a couple of times now. Punisher the Slavers is one that appears in all your top 5, all your top 10 lists. Every time someone compiles a Punisher list, it's always in there. And it's in there for a reason, which we're going to delve into.
Okay.
But yeah, it's Garth Ennis. So you're in safe hands with the Punisher with Garth Ennis.
I think he's arguably probably the most prolific Punisher writer, right? Because he did at least 10 years worth, I think, on the character.
Yeah, yeah. What's kind of interesting about this one, and you don't have to know this. You don't have to know, but it's good if you do know. So drop this in conversation to act like you do know. So he was writing Marvel Knights at the time. I think he was paired with Steve Ditko at the time, and they were doing Marvel Knights.
Dylan.
Yes, Ditko, Dylan. Lovers, not experts. Ditko in the brain. And yeah, so they were doing Marvel Knights at the time, which was, without using too much of a British colloquialism, it was kind of like the Hollyoaks After Dark of Marvel Comics. It was Marvel trying to be adult.
But within the Marvel Universe.
Yeah. And it kind of worked. I mean, Punisher is the natural character to fit in there. And the Dream Team were working away with him. But you had sort of things like, I think my favourite panel from all comics ever is Punisher giving a right hook to a polar bear. That's the Punisher Marvel Knights series. So it was okay, but it wasn't quite working. So it kind of abruptly stopped in 2004. And was rebranded as Marvel Max.
Which was full-on for adults.
For adults. Yeah. I mean, you always hear for adults, but this time the reins were really let off Garth.
Yeah.
To his mates, to us, first name terms.
G-Unit.
He really got to take the reins off. And the thing with Max is that it's more real-world-based. It can reference real-world events. There's very little crossover with the cast of the regular Marvel series. And yeah, the gloves really come off. So you've got like a series here that's just full on adult action with everything that comes with that. The gore, the violence, the horror. Just a natural place for the Punisher to exist.
And that's what really surprised me, because I thought I'd read the Max stuff and I hadn't. So when you lent me this book we're going to talk about, so I remember the Garth Ennis, Steve Dillon stuff, and that was it was more mature than the standard Marvel fare, and it kind of literally pissed on the likes of Daredevil and Spider-Man it was this famous Spider-Man team-up scene where he ends up getting the crap kicked out of him.
Yeah.
And the Punisher goes, oh, we had a team-up, you were great. Because he basically used him as like a bullet sponge or something. So when I read this stuff, I was like, oh no, this is actually another level of stuff. I found it quite shocking, because I was offended, but because I wasn't expecting how grim it was.
And it really is the entire Max line. I mean, it's a perfect foil for Ennis. But Ennis exists to me as that writer where I know when I'm going to pick up one of his books, I'm going to have that moment in it where I go, I didn't need to see that.
Mm.
That's Oh, for God's sakes. There's always that moment in his books, whether it be The Boys, which he's probably most famous for, arguably. The Boys, well, Constantine.
Most current.
So. Yeah, you can, like, this is why we're here, because everyone's going to tell you what he's most famous for. And, like, you don't have to read The Boys. We'll cover The Boys in another one. Don't worry. Let's start with this one. But, yeah, there's always that moment, like... For me, it sort of came to a head when he did Crossed. So he did the first volume of Crossed, and there's no way we're covering that one when I'm sober, because that's just horrific.
Is that the post-apocalyptic zombie series?
Post-apocalyptic, yeah. So imagine a world where it's like 28 days later, but instead of being a zombie, everyone's infected with this infection where you're just compelled to do the absolute worst thing that comes into your head. Right. So whether it be rape, mutilation... And Ennis doesn't hold back with that, especially the rape part, which I've always had a hard time with.
Likewise.
It's just like, don't like it. Don't like it. But like he keeps coming back to that. Like he most recently did a series called Jimmy's Bastards, which is like a play on the sort of Roger Moore era James Bond. So it's like a James Bond style character. And you're never sure whether it's going to walk the line between being serious and this guy's just out of place and out of time, or whether it goes 60s Camp Bond. But in 60s Camp Bond, Garth Ennis world, the villain unleashes this like ray across the world that just swaps everyone's sex. So suddenly, suddenly your genitals are replaced with the genitals of the opposite sex.
Right.
And of course, in any other comic, this would be quite humorous. But of course, Garth Ennis, what's the first thing that happens? There's just... madness across London as like women basically start raping men.
Jesus.
So again, sometimes with Garth Ennis you're like, oh, are you just doing this to push buttons? Mm-hmm. Like I'm not sure this should be in here for entertainment's sake, what you're trying to say. But this is why The Slavers appears on so many top five lists.
Right.
It's a horrific storyline matter that can probably only ever exist and be published in a Punisher comic, but it's handled with such different extremes and then such, I want to say gravitas. I'm not sure if that's the word I want to go with, but like, it doesn't feel exploitative.
Okay.
I don't know whether you'll disagree, and I'm sure you mean everyone you're going to talk to knows about this story, and they all have their own opinion. For me, it was a story that was just like, oh God, this is an awful subject matter. But what it does is it sort of empowers you as the reader. It sort of puts you in the Punisher's shoes to get to the end of this story, up the ante against the bad guy. So this time you're really rooting for the Punisher to like dispense his justice. And then in the end, it doesn't sugarcoat anything. It doesn't, you know, there's no wave of a magic wand. You know, those that he saves from this predicament don't necessarily have a happy ending. And it received a lot of commendation for the time of just like, fair enough. You've taken this real world horrific storyline and you've done something mature with it.
Yeah, definitely. So obviously I've read it. For the sake of people who haven't read it, how would you sum up the Slaver storyline? What's it about?
So we're in about volume 3. It's been rejigged again. You don't have to worry about this. The Punisher Max series has been like rejiggled a little bit. It's modern versions that you'll be able to purchase now. But basically, Punisher Max has come along. It's been a soft reboot for the character. So spandex clad superhero villain punching, mafia beating upping Punisher has been sort of redone, as he's now canonically a grizzled Vietnam vet.
Yeah.
It's lightly touched on in other volumes that there may be something just a little bit supernatural that explains how he just can keep going and how he's, you know, older than my granddad but can still, you know, take on the likes of the mobs. But anyway, we've had a couple of issues to settle in. He has laid waste to just scores, just literal generations of like New York gangsters and gangbangers. And along comes this volume. He is literally waiting to ambush some gangsters doing a deal when all of a sudden a woman runs out, breaks free and starts shooting at them, trying to get away from them. And he takes matters into his own hands. He's there with a sniper rifle, starts picking off all the gangers, saves her, confronts her, like, oh, you better get out of here. And she sort of basically tells them her story over the course of a night, where she basically explains that, you know, she's from, you know, deepest, darkest Eastern Europe during a civil war. I don't remember if they specifically name the war that is meant to be. I think they steer just shy of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, she basically explains how, you know, towards the end of the civil war, a platoon over there saw the way the war was heading, basically rounded up all the women folk of the villages and went into business, basically selling them as sex slaves. Mm. And it just ends with like a sort of brilliant panel of like, you know, the Punisher's like going, you know, she told me her story, and then by the end of it, I realised a lot of people were going to have to die. And you're like, oh shit, that's the end of the first episode. So yeah, here we go on a story of how the Punisher takes out this gang of sex traders.
Which is very much grounded in reality. Like that, like you say, I don't think they directly reference the conflict, but you know there are many accounts of this stuff actually happening.
Hmm.
So yeah, it's very, that's what really struck me. It was very, very real, and it was kind of really hard to kind of imagine this is the same New York that like Spider-Man's probably swinging above all this stuff, and it's like, well, no, this is clearly a whole separate, separate universe.
You know? I think that's what sticks the knife in. Is it just this stuff does go under the radar and underreported. And they make reference to that in the comic itself, but it's just you've literally just seen three levels of him taking out your usual run of the mill gangsters, and you're just like, fair enough, you know, I'm not really expecting anything more evil than that to come along, and then this just knocks the sails out of you, and you're like, oh shit, sort it out, Frank Castle, let's take these people out.
So did you pick this up when it was serialised on a monthly basis, or did you go straight for like the collection?
So I was sort of like a Punisher fan on the periphery.
Yeah.
I'd like played the video game which came along, which pretty much reshapes all of the Max storyline into a more, I'm not going to say PG because it was an 18 rated game, but it sort of takes it back into the Marvel Knights sort of Punisher. So like I recognised a lot of the story twists, but no, I was a student at the time and my housemate bought me volume 2 of the collected edition. He basically went to get me a birthday present and the comic book guy was like, read this is good. And whilst he's not wrong, comic shop guys, don't do this. Don't give someone a volume 2 of anything. Although, that said, I was so entranced by it, I then went out and bought the rest of the collected editions.
Exactly. It's a canny move, it was deliberate. Rather than give you volume 1, he wants you to get you 2, so you go, well, I'm going to have to buy volume 1 now. And then you realise it's volume 3 and volume 4. It's a canny move.
Got me hook, line and sinker.
Yeah.
So I was waiting for like 3 to come out quite earnestly. Again, it's not 3 in canon anymore. They've shuffled this about, but we'll come to that later.
Mm.
So I was just expecting more of the same. And then, of course, this is the first story in the collected edition. And it was like, Christ, this is deep and dark.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, they've shuffled it around, but the actual issues that we're talking about were issues 25 to 30 of Punisher Max, which in the volume you've got is volume 3 of a hardback, but I think currently it's like volume 2 of a softback they've done, but you can get them digitally as well through the likes of Comixology. That's actually probably it. You can't really get them anywhere else digitally.
And no, they are very slowly trying to put them back out as the paperbacks, but they're coming out, they're really trickling out.
I imagine with the success of the Punisher Netflix series, though, that's going to kind of get them issuing a lot quicker, I think, because we've got, you know, we've had one season when we record this, and it's season 2's filming, so.
Well, I hope so. I mean, the sad thing about, like, this Max run, or Ennis's Max run, is, like, it came to a very definitive end that is referenced in the Punisher series, where he gets himself arrested, so he's taken to the prison to the guys where he wants to kill. He knows he can't get to them any other way. So they use that plot device. I think that was, well, it was still part of the Daredevil series.
Yes.
Yeah. So there's like shades of that in there. But I'm hoping that the Max series gets reissued promptly and people get to experience it. It really is my favourite one.
Excellent.
So there's definitely a few standout scenes. And for me as a reader, it's always as the Punisher uses hyper-violence to get what he wants. That's the payoff you've been waiting for. And I think in this one, like, he realises that he's dealing with people that have committed unspeakable war crimes, and it's going to take more than just his average running around shooting their henchmen to scare them.
And these are guys who are military trained as well, so it's kind of, it's not just your generic hustler. So you do kind of have a sense that these guys are obviously not on the same level, because they are going to die. It's kind of like, spoilers, you know, it's obvious, that's the thing.
So. Yeah. So, I mean, you see a scene of him like where he goes to the library and starts reading up, and you're like, every time this happens, and it happens a few times in the series, and it's referenced again in the TV show, you know something bad is going to happen to them. So sure enough, he ends up going to the gang hideout and drugging their goulash that they're all eating together. Very unceremoniously goes around popping off the heads of his henchmen who are sat around the table with him, and abducts the big bad or the second in command. And as he comes out, he's sort of blindfolded, and the Punisher's telling him, well, you know, I want you all the details of your operation. I want the big bad. I want, you know, this, that, and the other. And he's like, I will tell you nothing, Punisher. You can't scare me. To which Punisher takes his blindfold off, and it's revealed that he's taken the guy's intestines whilst they're still inside him and wrapped them on the branches of the trees above him. And it's a simple one panel shot of the guy going, Wah! Punisher's like, well, it doesn't have to be fatal. Better make up your mind quick. And it was like, Christ, we have really, really pushed the boat out on this one when it comes to just horrific violence. There's another scene of there are several standout hyper-violent scenes in this. I honestly don't want to spoil the rest of them, because if one thing that Ennis does well is just shocking violence, and that is just the prelude to like what happens to the rest of the big bads in this one, which again they still have the power to shock.
Even
like flicking through it again this morning, and I was like, oh Christ,
you've wiped that from your memory.
He's not messing about. These people deserve a grisly fate, and Ennis via the Punisher really deals it out to them.
So going back to like other media, do you think that the reason why perhaps the Punisher Netflix series was such a success is because it kind of taps into the Max style of Punisher rather than the more superheroic spandex wearing?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, this one attempts to ground the Punisher character. There's nothing finger quotes special about him. There is, but there isn't. And it just fits. It fits into the universe of the Netflix special a lot more better. Again, he doesn't have superpowers. He just has his boundless rage, which fuels him.
He's very one-dimensional as a character, I think, isn't he? He's kind of got that drive. It's just like, I kill bad guys. There's no real emotional core, because if you did give him that, then he's no longer the Punisher. So it's kind of, I always find that must be a bit of a struggle for writers to take that character on. You could probably get like a couple of years worth of stories, and then you're like, I'm going to hit a brick wall.
I think that sums up the Ennis run very well. Yeah. That is essentially what happens to this one. Ennis takes a couple of breaks, and he comes back intermittently throughout the years to do several sort of preludes to the story, including like Frank Castle's time in Vietnam, which is a great series. We'll come to that later. It's really good. And he touches into, there's very little crossover characters. One of them is the sort of original Nick Fury.
Yes.
He crops up in this run as well, but he's pretty much the only character that does.
Ennis has form, because he wrote Fury, which was another Max series.
Yeah.
Which was ultra-violent spy japes.
So. Yeah, spy japes. And cross, again, it's the sort of prelude to this. It's kind of hard to pick a de facto starting point for when these characters exist in Ennis's universe. Yes, but I've completely forgotten the tangent. What was the original question?
He's a very difficult character, so he's very one-dimensional. Then.
Was, yeah. Sorry, we'll cut that bit out.
Or will we?
Or will we? So yeah, so Ennis takes this run, and you're right, like, he has to find new ways of motivating the Punisher. And it's pretty much at the start of every adventure, shall we call them, just the bad guys just find new ways to just piss him off. I think one of the more striking ones is where some bad guy trying to climb the ranks in the mafia literally digs up the bodies of his wife and children. So they're just bones.
Yeah.
And he videotapes himself just pissing on the bones. And he's like, come and get me, Punisher, if you think you can. So, yeah.
Wow.
Just
okay.
cuts to Frank Castle just like sitting there eating his meat and potatoes, just raging at the TV. Yeah.
Well, the thing is, that's something I was also going to talk about is the fact that the nature of the Punisher is that he kills the bad guys. So it's very difficult to have recurring villains.
Mm.
Like the likes of Batman, you know, there's the eternal struggle where, you know, the Joker crosses that line and will kill people.
Mm.
And Batman's having that internal thing of like, I'm going to capture you, lock you away. And there's moments where you think he's going to kill him, but, you know, that's what defines Batman.
Mm.
The same way that Superman hasn't killed Lex Luthor, you know. It would save millions of lives.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, they're heroes, they don't cross that line.
Mm.
Punisher does. So I've always found it's very difficult to kind of have more than probably one or two definitive Punisher villains. Like the most obvious one is Jigsaw.
Mm.
But again, I'm adamant that he's killed him a couple of times in the comics. He's come back from the dead. And then the other one, well, actually, there was a couple. Like, it was Barracuda, who Garth Ennis introduced, which I'm not that familiar with.
Yeah, specifically, I think, for the reasons that you're stating.
Yeah.
Barracuda, the shorthand version of the Barracuda is he's essentially the anti-Punisher. He is the Punisher, but he uses his murdering skills for evil.
Yeah.
He's literally a gun for hire and enjoys what he does, whereas the Punisher just sees it as a never-ending quest of dispensing justice. So, like you say, like what normally happens is, you know, there are big bads or main villains, but normally other villains cross over into the line of fire. Yeah. And so whilst Punisher's busy dealing with them, the recurring villains will like scarper off and escape in that instance, only to return and be dealt with in another one. And both cases, both the guy that digs up, you know, Punisher's family and the Barracuda, both come back for second arcs in the Ennis run and are dealt with quite, there's a definite full stop.
Very definitive.
Very definitive full stop for both of them. That said, Barracuda proved to be quite popular at the time, so he got a little spin-off. Only one series.
Yeah.
But definitely worth picking up as well if you enjoy the character.
Yeah, because the other villains that he encounters within the wider Marvel Universe are kind of, they're almost protecting the way. So you've got like the likes of the Kingpin.
Yeah.
Which, you know, apart from being built like a brick shit house and really, really strong, he's not going to stop an AK-47 clip from Frank. So that's kind of like he's protecting. There's also the other kind of similar mob star villains like Hammerhead and Tombstone. And again, I'm pretty sure that Frank has killed Hammerhead. Hammerhead has been killed many times, but they always keep coming back. But I think if you did a Punisher storyline, it's kind of, you can't have these guys keep coming back because you just think, well, this is crap. Yeah.
They do get around it to an extent in the Max timeline. Although Ennis departs, the Punisher series continues.
Yeah.
And so what they do is they introduce the Kingpin pretty much after Ennis is gone. The next big story arc is the Kingpin being introduced. But all Punisher knows is the legend of the Kingpin.
Yeah.
No one knows what he looks like. No one even knows if he's real. Sort of.
So it's a whole separate take. It's like a whole universe rather than kind of linking back to Marvel Universe.
So Fisk does come into it, but it's a bit more like the Netflix series. So the Netflix series sort of lifts from that. So in this one, Fisk is just a sort of enforcer that sort of decides to embody the legend of the Kingpin as it goes. And of course, the two of them are eventually pitted together. And there's only one way it can end.
Yeah, I guess there's any way you can do it, I suppose, and you just take it outside of that.
Mm-hmm.
And one other villain, I guess, that people are probably familiar with that I didn't really realise was like a Punisher foil was Bullseye, the assassin for hire, more commonly known as Daredevil's sort of arch-nemesis, really.
They have crossed swords,
but
again, Bullseye always just, in the nick of time, slithers away to live to fight another day.
Because I guess you can't kill him.
Can't kill him, but
he's, continuity.
He's definitely on Frank's list, you know? There's nothing Frank would like to do more than kill a paid assassin.
I kind of wonder what the original creators of Punisher would think about this. So this is going back to February 1974, where he appeared as in Spider-Man, and it was created by Jerry Conway, John Romita Sr. and Ross Andrew, who are the art team. And it's kind of leagues away, I think, how he's appearing now as he did then.
There's very few interviews about the Max series being established, like even from Ennis himself. Yeah. It did get a lot of praise at the time, but the most you'll find is just confirmation that it was approved by the higher-ups. Like, Stan Lee did have sign-off, But
I can't imagine he was sat there literally reading it.
Yeah, blow his head off. That'd be great.
Yeah.
No, it was signed off in the proviso that we're letting Ennis off the leash. He can have what he wants.
But do you think part of the agreement was that it was set in a separate... It wasn't part of the Marvel Universe?
To a degree, and I think that's... But that's only because Knights wasn't working.
Yeah.
So I think both parties sort of realised that if they were going to make this work, couldn't exist in the Marvel Universe as we know it.
So I guess it's linking it back to the media stuff as well. So it's probably a reason why Netflix TV shows, even though they're supposed to be set in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, they'll never meet. Because I think one of the edicts of the Disney movies is that they're all ages or close to all ages. You can't have an 18 certificate Marvel Cinematic movie currently. Whether that will change, I don't know. But
don't you think? I'd still say this, that, you know, with the likes of the Civil Wars and whatnot, not Civil Wars. That's terrible. Total brain fart.
Well, the new one, Infinity War.
Infinity Wars. So with the likes of Infinity Wars coming up, there's still room for just a shot of the Defenders in New York.
Yeah.
Doing the hero pose.
But I also think the reason behind it is because if you're, I don't know, an 8-year-old kid, 9-year-old kid, and you're into them...
I want to watch that, Mum!
Well, you see that and you go, I don't know who they are, I want to watch it. Yeah. I guess once they... Because we're on phase... This is part of phase 3, like Infinity Wars. Once that's done, maybe it opens up. Once they get past the whole Thanos storyline, I'm still waiting for a Blade movie. You know, they've got the rights back.
Is Blade decanonized?
As in the original movies.
Yeah.
I don't think there's arguments that the first Blade movie was the first big Marvel movie because it was the most successful one, I think. Because prior to that, we had like Punisher with Dolph Lundgren in 1989. Because I was about to say Spider-Man, but Blade came out before Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not part of canon, but Wesley Snipes already said he's well up for doing it, and I would be surprised if once we get past the slate of movies for this phase 3, you will get more adult Marvel movies. I think they're missing a trick otherwise.
Yeah, they certainly are.
We're on a bit of a segue there, a bit of a tangent. A
little bit, forgive us. So, in terms of, read this before you die, is this an essential one to pick up? Essentially, yes.
And you don't necessarily need to read the prior volume.
Don't need, the thing with Frank Castle, as you say, he's a blank slate.
Yeah.
You can pick this up at any time. I would thoroughly recommend the Ennis Max run, which you can pick up either hardback, softback, or Comixology or the like. It is readily available. You sort of owe it to yourself to read it just to see what the Punisher can do with a proper mature storyline and a mature subject, and just explain it in terms of emotions mixed with a hell of a lot of machine gun fire.
That's the back of the box quote, isn't it?
Well, it's a bit of a wordy one. In terms of other reading, I mean, like we touched on earlier, definitely pick up Punisher Kills the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
Ennis does dip in and out of the Max series for Punisher. Definitely go back and pick up the stories like Born and Platoon, where we have the Punisher's days in Vietnam. You're well rewarded for reading those. And as we also touched on, we've got Nick Fury. He's got like a sort of 60s spy caper that sort of happens parallel to that. So any of the Nick Fury stuff written by Ennis that comes under the Max label, it all bleeds across to the Punisher Max run. Definitely pick those up as well.
Great stuff. Great, well that's it for another episode of Read This Comic Before You Die. Please like and subscribe. Follow us on Twitter at BAM Comics Cast. We're also on Facebook on BAM Comics Cast. You can follow us individually. You can follow me on Twitter under Stoonami.
And you can follow me under Neil Gotts with a Z.
And thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks, bye.